Welcome to the Boomer Woman's Podcast, and a reminder that name will change a wee bit soon. I'm your host, Agnes Knowles. Do you have all your end-of-life documents in order? Today's guest talks about those. Primarily, Oscar explains living trusts. I mentioned near the beginning that Oscar is American and talks to documents you should have in order there. After our conversation, I did some sleuthing about estate planning and documents in Canada, and there are a few differences. So get educated with Oscar today, and then fine-tune that education within your own jurisdiction, wherever that is. Oscar is a great storyteller, and one of his characters is the tattooed son-in-law. Rest assured that the tats are more fun than the son-in-law, so don't take offense if you have tats. Maybe one day I'll show you mine. Oscar also emphasizes that sometimes our last breath happens when we least expect it, so get all of your affairs in order today. So many important reasons why. Near the end, Oscar has an offer that is hard to refuse if you're in the U.S. Listen now. Estate planning. It's a bit of a soapbox for me, because people don't want to think about it. They put it off till tomorrow and are quite sure their families will sort it out. Well, reality check. Your life will end whether you think about it or not. Tomorrow is already the busiest day of the week, and you may get hit by that proverbial bus this afternoon. And your families may be able to sort it out, but the government will take a cut if they need to sort it out. Lawyers have respectable fees to help your family through it. Oh, and your family needs to cough up expenses as they go. Expenses cannot be deferred until they get your money. Which reminds me, personal story. 2 and some years ago, I agreed to caretake a house after the owner had passed, to keep it up until the estate settled. I figured it was a short-term contract, as the will was thorough, the executor was smart and had intimate knowledge of the deceased, the I's were dotted, the T's were crossed, and the executor was semi-retired, so had quite a bit of time to take care of things. Here it is, 26 months later. The house is finally sold, but the estate isn't fully settled yet. I'll have the executor on as a guest sometime to explain how many things can go sideways with an estate. I can't even imagine the hassle if that person had died without all their planning and paperwork in order. Have I got your attention? My guest today helps people with estate planning. It's more than just a will and an executor. It's how to protect your money, your assets, your wishes, so your family can benefit from as much of your life planning as possible. Legacies include your kids, grandchildren, even your pets, and certainly any charitable causes you want to help out. And don't tune out if you think you don't have much. You'd be surprised how much you still need to plan for as you age up. Ready? Oscar Vasquez, welcome to the Boomer Woman's Podcast.
Well, great. What a great introduction. Thank you so very much. I'm super excited to be here and share as much information and more than anything is educate the audiences, because the main reason we started to on this, I call it a crusade, because knowing that 68% of homeowners in America do not have an estate plan in place, aka living trust. And it came to me over the holidays that I wonder why, and I started talking to my own customers, and it's not because they don't care about their estate or they don't care about their kids. It's that they're not aware of it. If you don't know, you don't know. And so today, hopefully we bring enough value to let people know what they don't know, what estate planning could do. Because once you know, you can't not know.
Okay, well, you've just answered my first question. Before we dive in, though, I do want to just comment that I mentioned to you when we first chatted that you're in the U.S., I'm in Canada, our listeners are everywhere. Some of what you talk about is U.S. laws and forms, but for non-Americans, the info is still pertinent, probably even parallel. All they need to do is research similar information in their own jurisdiction. Is that correct?
That is correct. And here's the thing. A state law is worldwide, because the government always, it doesn't matter what country you're in, the government, if you do not have an estate plan or your paperwork in place, the government's going to want their cut. And two, we're also going to have our attorneys get their cut. So having an estate plan doesn't matter. That is a worldwide problem. Now, the statistics I only pulled for the United States, but yes, you'll know what you need to know. I'll give you an example. I had a conversation with somebody out of Mexico that understood it. And they're like, hey, you know what? I'm a U.S. citizen. I lived in Mexico. I heard one of your podcasts. How do I protect it here? And I said, well, you need to hire somebody that knows the document, that has the documents. Our documents and our software are structured for all 52 states in the United States, because every state has a different law and a different wording, which leads me to helping listeners understand what a living trust or an estate plan is, because they go like, well, I need an attorney to do it. No, you don't. And here's why. Understanding what a living trust is, to the very bare basics and the shortest and the simplest explanation is, I could say it's a contract between you, the grantor, and your kids, the beneficiaries, telling them what you want to have happen so they don't say mom wanted to be buried in the north, not the south, or she wanted to be facing west and she wanted her feet going south, right? It's none of that gets done, because in your living trust, it has that much detail and it's that agreement. And then the courts help enforce that so everybody's protected. But even more important, that's an understanding and the basic understanding of what it is. So in every state of the land in the United States, and you have to check in your local jurisdiction, but every state has certain wording that they want in the living trust that are legal terms in the agreement to be able to prevent it from going to probate. And which leads me to the second definition I want to start off with, because we're going to use the word living trust and probate quite often.
Probate. I've got a whole list of things that you're going to define for me. Trust me.
Okay, great. So I want to give, because probate is probate. The simplest way that I've learned to define probate is that the government decides what happens to your things when you die. Anything you can't take with you when you die, the government will decide if it has a base value. Oh, guess what? You come with nothing and you leave with nothing. So to this world, but you leave some stuff behind. So the government says, we want to protect our citizens of our land by making sure that anything they leave behind, we want to make sure it goes to the right person. And that's called probate. And we want to decide who it goes to. So that means if you have a child from a previous marriage, and you've never seen that child, and it was not a child, it was never had a relationship, that child comes to probate, the court's more likely going to give them a piece, even though you've never had that relationship. But probate, in layman's, in the simplest form, is when the court decides on what happens to your stuff, or your assets, or anything that you have of asset. And then they charge you for it. So they charge the estate. And then they publicize it because they want the world to know, if he owes you money, you need to come forward or we're going to pay it out and you're never going to get your money, right? Because it becomes, in the United States, it becomes a public notification. And this is why the estate in the United States takes so long to settle. Now, you can liquidate assets, but the beneficiaries, your kids, will have no money for anywhere. The fastest I've seen an estate get settled is 6 months. The longest I've heard, because I've been doing a lot of workshops, the longest I've heard is 8 years that it's taken for the kids to get their estate. So if you don't plan, that's what you're going to – I always say, like, hey, if your kids have not been nice to you, don't get an estate plan. Right? Because they will definitely pay for it. You know, they're going to pay back everything for them not being nice to mom or dad, right? But that's the two things. So so probate and the living trust are the two things we're going to really talk about a lot today.
Okay. I'm going to back up just a little bit there.
Sure.
Because I said you've just answered my first question. About 68% of homeowners don't have an estate plan because they don't know. I think the very first thing my former husband and I did after we had our very first child was get everything in order, because we were going to decide who took care, who raised our child if we got hit by the bus. Well, so astonishes me that people don't know.
Well,
about...
there's no other conclusion. How could you not love your kids enough to not protect them? The only conclusion that would come to me is, one, you hate your kids, or two, you don't know. I can't think of somebody that you gave birth to that you don't want to protect them. The only conclusion that comes to me is that they don't know that estate planning is an essential part of having assets. You know, you can't take it with you. And that's just my personal conclusion, because I cannot comprehend the fact that people do not have an estate plan and they own a house. Because here's the thing, I'll give you an example. In California, if you have anything of value, as in every state, and I just did one in Colorado and I just looked it up. In California, if you have anything of value over $184,000, your accounts get frozen. Then it goes to probate. Has to. Okay, that's a must. Anything over $84,000. If it's under $84,000, it can be a transfer. But guess what? There's nothing in California that is a piece of that. If you own a house in California, the average home in California is $500,000. So there's nothing that's less than that. In Colorado, the minimum value of your estate is $60,000. So anything that's less than $60,000 can be transferred on death without taxes and other benefits. However, knowing that the government's going to freeze your home, not your kids are not going to be able to liquidate the asset, one. Two, imagine if you had a retirement account and the kids needed that retirement account money to bury you. Now that money got frozen because you didn't have an estate plan. Now, most people say, well, I add them as a beneficiary. And I always say, well, what happens is this: on a 401k in the United States, you have access to it when you become disabled, incapacitated, or you want to buy a house where you don't have to pay taxes. Well, guess what? If you still have a mortgage or you want to protect your kids, you have what's called a power of attorney through your estate plan that says you have access to pay my bills and pay any medical through any one of these accounts. And one of those accounts is your retirement account, because you'll be able to get access. If they're only the beneficiary, you have to die for them to get it. That's not going to help you then, right? It's funny.
Okay, so explain a little bit more about just what a living trust is, please.
Okay. Yeah, a living trust is based in the shortest term is a contract between you and your kids on what your instructions are, what you want to have happen with your things. I'll give you an example. We do a lot of estate planning for educators and teachers in the state of California. And I mean, they come up with some creative ways on how to create a living trust. I mean, women that are determined to have their kids go to school. I had one create a living trust and said, if they liquidate the house or they're going to liquidate one rental, none of the kids can get assets. That money is to be for my grandkids, and they can have access to the money or to the liquidation. Right. This is how comprehensive living trust can become. And the software does it where they can go to school and they can get it for tuition and books. They have to feed and house themselves, but we're going to pay for the education. If they don't go to school, if they don't go to school, they don't get any access to the money until they're 35, and they only get $35,000. If they go to school, if there's enough money, because what they did is they put the money into an account that compounds over time, right? Now, these are children, and so there's always more money in 10 years from now or 20 years from now if they don't go to school. And that same money, if you don't use it, it's kind of like that. I like using the analogy of that one penny that doubles every day or $1 million today, right? So, and then she said, when they turn 35, if they go to school, they get, when they're 35, they get 80,000. And I said, wow, what an incentive to go to school. You should go to school no matter what, right? And she goes, that's exactly what I want for my grandkids. I want them to go that. And I said, why? How did you come up with this idea? And she says, my grandmother did that for me. And that's how I became a teacher. And I had to find a profession that I loved and that I was passionate about. And I loved kids. And so that's why how I came. And I was like, wow, it's amazing how not only does a living trust protect your kids, but it changes the trajectory of the future of your family and how that affects it, right? Because it's not just a document to save them from taxes. It's not just a document to save them from the government deciding. If you go deep into an estate plan, it can change the projection of your kids, your grandkids. I mean, I'll give you an example. In my particular case, my mother just said that she never wanted the house sold because she was a single mother, had five young children. She worked three jobs, and she says, I don't leave you much but the house, but I don't want it sold for three generations. After three generations, I know one thing, you're never going to be cold. If you're hungry, it's because you're lazy, you didn't go to work. But if you can't feed yourself, it ain't enough, right? So, and that's how deep a living trust can be kept. So the contract to your kids not only defines on what you want, but it can go in as deep as you want it to. And they always say, well, what are the limitations? I said, the limitations are what's in between your ears. Your mind is the limitation on how you can structure this living trust. And so in essence, the living trust is instructions to your kids, right? Instructions or demands, because they cannot deviate from it, because that's where the court comes in and says, wait a minute, you violated mom's law or mom's living trust, because her demand was this house wasn't to be sold. The sold cannot sell the house, and the beneficiaries can get that. So in essence, in depth, that's what a living trust does. Now, a comprehensive living trust means that it goes into legacies and layers, and it has additional documents that come with a comprehensive living trust. Okay, and if you permit, if time allows, I'd love to go more into all of those documents and how they're used in a comprehensive living trust. I'll give you an example. One of the biggest documents that I've seen that has the most value. Well, all of them have tremendous value when they're needed, right? If they're not needed, then they have no value. However, it's kind of like an insurance policy, right? It's only good when you have a claim. Other than that, it's a bill. It's a rock in your shoe. And you guys, you know, do I really need this rock in your shoe? And you kind of go like, yeah, I need it, because the day I need it, or the day I cancel it, I'll probably need it the day after. So, that document, it's called a pour over will. Every estate plan in the land that's comprehensive comes what they called a pour over will. And that pour over will is a document that is attached to it and says, and it basically says, if I own anything over X, I want it into the living trust and liquidated according to my living trust. However, if any of my beneficiaries object to my pour over will, in other words, create havoc in the courts that cost everybody money, they're automatically disinherited. What that does, it expedites the probate process. You still have to go to probate. I'll give you an example. You travel to another state, you buy a vacation condo, you come home, you don't fund it, you don't put it in your living trust. 2 years goes by, you get sick, your number comes up, you go. You know, this morning we had a living trust workshop, and the lady goes, "Well, how do we know when's the best time to buy?" And I said, "It's like asking me when you're going to die. I am not a doctor. I don't know, right?" I said, 2 hours before you die, you should create your living trust. Good luck. Anyways, so the power of attorney, you go to vacation, you buy a condo, you die, you come in, and then they say, I have an out-of-state asset. How do I get that? How do I protect that?" And so the pour-over will, the executor goes, files the probate. There's no objection. It goes smoothly through the process, and they transfer title into the living trust and gives you all of the benefits of that living trust. So now it can be distributed according to the living trust. And that's a document saying, hey, in case I forget. Which leads me to one of the most, because we're here to tell the truth, right? The people always go, what's the downfall of the living trust? I'll tell you the downfall. It's a living document until you are no longer here. Because it cannot make any changes. When you're gone, it's done. No more changes. But it's a living document. And that means it needs to be cared for. It needs to have attention. It needs to be updated, and it needs to be looked at a minimum of 3 years. So if you have a living trust, it should be looked at minimum of every 3 years. And they're like, they say, "Well, what is the one thing that we should look at?" And I said, I'll tell you a story about the, I call it the tattooed son-in-law, and where the daughter married the tattooed son-in-law that he was not very active or steady in working, so to speak, right? Because it's a true story. I hate to have it, but it's true. It happened. She married this man, tattooed, good-looking gentleman, but he just couldn't hold a job. Just was not his cup of tea, right? And mom and daughter went to Puerto Vallarta into Mexico on vacation. They got in a car accident. They passed. The husband called and says, "Hey, Oscar, can you help me update my living trust, because my wife and my daughter died about 2 months ago, and my son-in-law is just driving me nuts, you know, and I want my grandkids to get her assets or what she's entitled to, and I don't want this nice guy to get it at all." And what happened is, when he came and he says, "I'm going to go see my sister. I'm going to go by and see you. Can you help me update my software?" He was a lot older. He was an older gentleman, and you get unlimited updates. He went to Texas, came back. He never came back. He passed. His son called and says, "Hey, my father passed. I just wanted to make sure that he went in to update updated the living trust, because I don't have a copy of it." I said, "No, he gave me instructions, but he never executed a restatement." Because any living trust, super important. A living trust, you cannot scratch out the name and then add a name. You have to do what's called a restatement. So if the living trust lives on its own, and then they have a new living trust that's on top of it that says, "The living trust dated in January 2023 was updated on January 9th, 2025. And these are the updates, and all the other provisions are there." And that means that the estate no longer wants to go to Carrie. They're going to go to their children, and that portion of that goes to their children. They can have access to it when they go to school for school, but they have no access to the funds until they're 25 or 30 years old, et cetera, et cetera. Put up all the provisions that he wanted. Well, because the reinstatement and the update did not happen, the son-in-law ended up with $1.6 million of the father-in-law and mother-in-law's retirement accounts and liquidated assets. That's a sad story because they were nice people. They cared for their kids. And, you know, I guess the guy was there at the right time. My mom always said, look, when good things happen to you, it's because you deserved them. When bad things happen, it's because you deserved them. You did something in some life to be able to do that. So take it, say thank you, Lord, and move on.
Now, in a living, I just want to interrupt you there because here is, I'm maybe just telling too much of my own story. I have a will. Uh-huh. In the case that, you know, obviously my children are the beneficiaries. In the event that one of those children predecease me, and I don't know, I've heard that if, like, for the mother and the daughter to die together because the mother's older, it's assumed the mother died first unless there's medical proof. But in the case that one of my children predecease me, all of what they would have inherited goes to their children. Is that part of a living will? Can you specify that, or do you have to wait till somebody's gone?
In the state of California, let me define the difference between a will and a trust.
Please, yeah.
Because that is the largest confusion in the market, or that I hear. Oh, I already have a will. Okay, great. Let me tell you what a will is. A will is, I love you, I leave you everything, and that's a basic instruction to tell the court that this is what you wish to have happen. But they still, a will does not prevent probate, which means it does not prevent in California. I'll give you an example. The minimum probate cost in California is $26,000, minimum. An estate plan, a comprehensive estate plan, if you have an attorney do it, is a fraction of that. However, if you use our software, it's even more a fraction of that. But a will is basic instructions. Now, a will is 1-2 pages long. A living trust, I can share. I was going to show it because I thought we were on that. But a living trust, a comprehensive living trust, including all the additional documents, is anywhere from 146 to 220 pages because of all of the specifications and directions that are in the living trust. Now, the will gives instructions to the court on what you want to have happen. The court still decides. Now, 99.9% of all the siblings are together and they go to court, then they will say yes. But I'll give you an example. There is a case in California that they had a will and it was supposed to go to their grandkids. But because in the state of California, we're called a common law state, which means in my wife's case, it's what's mine is hers and what's hers is hers. No, but I say that, but no, it's 50-50. It's your spouse, you automatically get 50% of your spouse's, you're entitled to it, right? It's part of, it's called the common law state. So if you had a will, even though you excluded them because it's not in the trust, that still goes to one, it goes to probate, and then the court decides what happens to it. I mean, the tattooed son-in-law could come up and say, you know what, I need to be able to support these kids. I need access to that money, right? And if he has access to the money, then that means, if even though it's not his money, but I always tell people, it's, you don't have to have the money, you just need to have control of the money. And then it's your money, right?
Yeah.
And having control, and because once the assets get distributed, the courts say, we're done. If you don't put there's a provision in the living trust that's called a spendthrift provision. And this is what goes deeper into a living trust, where they say, if there's a spendthrift provision, if he's the guardian for the children, he could be the guardian, or I want this provision to be for my grandchildren, but the executor of my trust. Like in the United States, you can actually have a lending institution or a bank that runs your living trust and does distributions on your behalf to the children. So that way, if there's not a trustworthy executor, that you need the provision. So then obviously if they're an institution, they make their fee, it's a professional management is what you're paying for. You pay 1%, but if it's a large sum of money, you want to make sure that the kids have a benefit and that's generational. It's worth the 1% to have the peace of mind that the kids are going to be able to have it. Because once you give control to somebody, to your assets, you've given up control, you're done. And you know what? Or you could say what my mom used to say is come back and pull their legs, touch their legs when they're asleep and wake them up.
I do want to interject here insofar as an executor, just because I have information about another estate, or at least another person who is still in the land of the living. But boy, if they die the way they are today financially, it's complicated. And so sometimes when it's super complicated like that, you don't want to inflict that on a friend or a family member. It's easier for an administrator, the bank or whomever, to take care of that just to make sure it's done right. It can be a huge headache.
When it gets deep, when I say deep, like layers and stuff, I always tell them, listen, you need to have this conversation. I usually recommend to say have two conversations. One, when you're going to have a permanent guardianship of a child, if you have that, because that's one of the documents that comes with the comprehensive living trust, right? And you want to have a conversation and say, hey, listen, I'm putting you down as a permanent guardianship. Is that something you're okay with? You should have that conversation. Sure. And two, do they have your religious beliefs or your beliefs are in common on how you want your children, right? Because that's, I think, and that's my personal opinion, I don't have any kids, but I've been a godparent to 4 kids and they live with me. And I believe that what we instill in our kids is how they grow up, right? It all starts at home. I truly believe that. But if they don't have the same values, then you need to consider, that's one of the things you need to consider. And it all starts by having that deep conversation. Two, if they're not mechanically inclined, but economically inclined to be able to have all these mechanisms, then it's always better to have a professional, have it done, especially if you're living a large estate and you want it complicated. That's why people say, is that why most people, what they do is they just say, you know what, give them the house, let them do whatever they want. Sometimes that's okay, but you know, it all depends on what you want. This is the good thing, right? Because in the estate plan, what happens is what you want. The creator, what the creator wants. Whoever's creating the living trust, that's what happens. So it can do whatever you want. And I can tell you, 98% of the people, almost 100%, I would say, when they're done with their living trust, and sometimes they've already spent years thinking about it, and they know what they want, and they're decisive, and we get them done in 2-3 days. Some of them takes 2-3 months, because there's a lot of undecisive of, do I really want that? Is that really gonna what I want? And I always tell people, look, protect the house, get it done, and then you can, because our comprehensive living trust comes with unlimited updates, then you can keep adding to it, because it costs nothing. So, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that we keep on talking about home ownership and things like that. If a person doesn't own a house, doesn't own anything like in terms of big property, they can probably manage then. I'm just thinking like my investments, like I decided not to be a homeowner anymore several years ago.
Yeah.
So everything that I have right now, investments, all that sort of stuff, they have direct beneficiary lines. So in the case of someone who doesn't own like tangible property that is in their name alone, they need a living trust, but other people probably don't if you don't own major property.
That's why that is correct. Like, I'll give you an example. Who has to have one in the United States, a living trust, is anybody If you live in Colorado, if you have a retirement account, a savings account, or anything that is worth more than $60,000, you have to have it or you're going to go to probate. They're going to take half your assets. In California, if you own a house, you have to because there's nothing worth below under $184,000. So you have to have it. So if you're a homeowner, 99%. Now, two, if you have assets, I'll give you an example. If you have assets in retirement accounts, in fixed index annuities, retirement, or even a pension, because we do a lot with teachers. Teachers don't get a retirement account. They don't get Social Security in California. But what they do get is they get lifetime income with survivor benefits to one of their kids, to some of their kids, or to all of their kids. That is a retirement income. That means a lifetime income for them. And I always say, well, that's good. And you should have a living trust for that because you give instructions on what happens to those assets. If you happen to pass and the kid's 22 years old and they end up with a windfall of $3,000 a month, they're going to go buy a car, you know? But you know, you do that. So if you have any kind of liquidity or any kind of, because in essence, Jim, everybody has an estate. Everybody. The only difference is what's the estimated value. And the government only wants to get involved if there's enough money so they can charge you. If they ain't going to charge you, they don't want to get involved. There's no money there. Why would they want to? That's my thought. I shouldn't say that. That's just my personal belief. But I think that they say there could be, because there could be crimes. There could be infidelity. There could be a lot of things that could happen not having a probate. And if they go in, so I think that's one of the reasons they put the minimum on there. Because they want to charge you, but that's just my personal opinion.
So this is a homeowner. If they have a living trust and they keep it updated, they don't need a will?
No.
Okay. I want to.
Yeah, but a comprehensive living trust comes with a will. Okay, the comprehensive living trust comes with a pour-over will. So in case you accumulate something, it gets put into the living trust.
Okay.
Right. Now I'm gonna tell you another person that I was just thinking that who else would definitely need if you're not a homeowner but you do have some type of retirement in the United States, a special needs child needs to have. It's called the special needs trust that you need to create for the special needs child. Because if you leave them a windfall of money or an asset directly in their name, the federal government won't help them or do any kind of assistance until they deplete all of their assets. And I was like, that's crazy. Right? You know, so you have a living trust, it's called a special needs trust for that child or the adult, because some of them grow, you know, some of the special needs children become adults. And so if they outlive the parents, at least you have the peace of mind, right, to be able to make sure that one, they're taken care of, and two, if there's things that the government won't take care of, the special needs trust be able to do that, like special trips, special items. Like, you know, we had a client that on the special needs trust, she made sure that, you know, she loved amusement parks, and she wanted to make sure that there was money in the trust that was going to be used for once a year to go to at least one amusement park. That was a minimum, right? She can go as many times as she wants. But there was funds for that. So those are the things that most people in the living trust don't realize that it's super important to have, and it's a mandatory thing. So living trust for special needs, to protect your assets, and more importantly is the peace of mind of your kids and your grandkids, that knowing that you want, where you wanted to be buried, what you wanted in your life. And what is it that there's no doubt, to leave no doubt in what you wanted?
Okay, I'm going to keep on throwing some of these terms at you, if you don't mind, and just get you to explain them. Advanced directives, I know those are for when you're still alive, but I did see them on your website.
Yes. An advanced directive is somewhat of a power of attorney that gives you the right to be able to make healthcare decisions when you become incapacitated for somebody else. For example, you are incapacitated, the advanced directive becomes the legal document that the doctors say, okay, this is what has to happen. Are you there? Right? This is what you want. In the United States or in the hospitals, they can come and give you information about your loved ones and, oh, this is what's happening to him or this is what happened. One thing they don't do in the United States, if you don't have a advanced care directive with a HIPAA waiver, they don't give you the medical records to get a second opinion because the person is incapacitated. So, and they did not waive their right or give the right to you to have their medical records. So a healthcare directive is how, that's one of the ways that a healthcare directive can benefit you by having a comprehensive living trust and be able to do that.
Okay. I was wondering about that because here in BC, for example, we have health representatives, which means I have decided that this person can make decisions about, because perhaps I'm not be able to communicate or whatever, right. They can make decisions. Advanced directives are often something that are attached to the front of the fridge, because if you fall down and, okay, so say you have a stroke, do you want to be taken to the hospital and put on life support and all sorts of things, or do you want to just go quietly? Yeah. As opposed to if you fall down and break your hip. Yeah, right. Definitely I want something to happen. I want to be fixed. I want you to take those extra, whatever extra needs right. that you need to do. So that's what we have up here.
And that's the same way here. It's what your wishes are. But in the healthcare directive that we have, the person decides on what happens. That's why this is probably the document that takes the longest to decide, because it's like, you know, you start thinking like, wow, how long do I really want to live? You know, you have to, you know, because you can, one, either document it and say what you want, or two, you say, I leave 100% in the hands of so-and-so. And then you go, when they see that, they go like, Mom, why would you do that to me? You know, that's a deep, that's a deep, like, and I always say, people always ask, well, who, you know, what kid, how do I choose? I mean, I say, look, take the one that loves you and the one that spends the most time with you that understands you, because they gonna know what you really wanted along the day, right? All throughout the day, throughout your life. And if you spend equal time with everybody, then you know what? Pray on it, because that's going to be a tough one, right?
I've told my kids, they pull that plug or I'll come back and haunt them.
Right? Well, you know, and obviously don't, you know, my mom always said that, you know, she took 15 days, but, you know, in her healthcare, she said she wanted all five of us. And I'll tell you, it was a very, very difficult, it was a difficult situation between five kids to be able to make a decision, because we all had different, even though we're all kids, we all had different relationships. With my mother. I mean, she always said, you guys are like my fingers. You're all different, but I love you all the same. You know?
Yeah. And it's really tough for a child or even a group of children to say,
yeah,
we've got to pull the plug because that's what she wanted. Yes. It's like putting a knife in her heart. You know, it's so tough. It's such a huge decision.
And I got to tell you, but you know what though? It's better that the family decides than the hospital, because you have the peace of mind. Or in other words, I would call it the government, right? Because the government to say, hey, you know what? There's nothing more we can do. She's going on hospice. She's got to go. Bye. Oh, wait a minute.
You know? Well, I find it interesting, too, when you say pick what the child that loves you the most, or you love them?
I would say the child that you've communicated the most with.
Okay.
Because the child that communicated the most with knows and understands you the most because of the conversations you have.
Yeah.
The more time you spend with somebody, the more you get to know them. The more that you know, like I can tell you, my oldest sister, she's like a mother to me. And I know when she's not having a good day. I just say, sister, I'll call you tomorrow. I just got another call. Right? Because I know her that well.
Yeah, the reason I was bringing this up is just that making that decision can rip those siblings apart. So in your case, if four of you said, Mom wants us to pull the plug, and one of them said, don't you dare, I will never forgive you, and the plug gets pulled, it's conceivable that one person will just walk away from you.
Yes.
You know, because they're just ripped apart.
But that's why I don't think anybody pulls a plug without talking to their siblings. I mean, you got to just be really cold. I think the conversation says, hey, listen, I got chosen for this responsibility, but I couldn't see anybody just being human, right? It's saying, hey, you know what, brother? Mom talked to me. I've talked to her. This is what she's always wanted. That's what are you okay? I mean, I couldn't see anybody just doing it without having a conversation with their siblings.
Well, I have another solution, though, is you pick the kid that you don't like and appoint them, but tell them you want the wire cut with a pair of scissors. And then they just fry them. I'm sorry, I'm being silly.
Right. that's a good one.
Okay, another word I saw, and I must admit, this has been explained to me a dozen times, and I never get it straight. Revocable versus irrevocable.
Okay. Revocable means changeable. Means you can change it, update it, and update it as many times as you want. So if your daughter gets a divorce and marries a tattooed boyfriend, you could a tattooed boy, then you could change it and update it. If your son gets married to somebody that is just not very nice to the family, then you know you can update it. Revocable means why you're there. Irrevocable means that you can't, once you put something into the trust, you can't take it out. Okay? And that's the biggest change, and you cannot make changes. In the revocable, you can put stuff in, take stuff out, take in, take out, take in, take out, spend it, don't spend it, do whatever you want with it, change it, add people. Hey, you want to give the lady that's taking care of you, she's the caregiver. You can say, I don't have any money today, but when I die, I'll remember you, kind of a thing, right? Whatever. All of that can be done and updated as many times as you can by a restatement and changes with revocable. An irrevocable living trust means you cannot make changes. Once you add an asset, you can't remove it. Once you add people, you can't take them off. And once you take them, and you can't take them off. So you can only add, you cannot take out. In other words, you can only deposit and not withdraw.
Okay.
Until the provisions of the living trust are expedited.
Okay. I have another question for you, but before we move on, I believe that another reason it's really important to have all your ducks in a row legally is that as soon as you get a diagnosis of dementia, you are no longer legally able to sign those documents or something like that. Is that correct? With dementia?
That's correct. It's called incapacitated.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, once you have dementia and you have any signs of that, it's going to make it very difficult to have the legal documents. Because once in the United States, and I keep saying that because I want to make sure that all the listeners throughout, in check with your local, but in the United States, and there's three things that need to have happen in a living trust. One, it needs to be signed in front of a public notary, somebody that's notarized, to be able to identify you and confirm that you signed the documents. Two, you have to have two people that are not beneficiaries sign the document. So they cannot contest it, saying, yes, I know her and she signed it. I was there, she signed it. And the third thing, it needs to be funded. You got to have assets in the living trust. If you don't have assets, it's not going to protect anything, right? So to make the living trust a living trust, that it's living, is that those three things have to have it in there. Now, the number one, if I had to summarize, the number one benefit that people get by creating a living trust is that they save money by not going to probate. That's the first pro, right? And in no particular order, but that is one of the biggest benefits. The second largest benefit that people get a living trust, why they get it, is because their kids, if, for example, if a house in the in California, they bought it for $100,000, when they die, and it's not in the living trust, their tax basis stays at $100,000, and they have to pay, and the house is worth $1 million, they have to pay taxes on $900,000. When it's in a living trust, the tax basis goes up to $900,000. That's why most kids, the house is in California, the parents in California, they're in Tennessee, they say, I don't have to pay taxes on the $1 million house. Shit, sell the house and I'll bring the money to Tennessee, right? Because they don't have to pay any taxes on it. So one is it changes the tax basis. That's the second. And the third reason, which I think should be number one, but I think is that the parents do it so the siblings don't have any doubt of what they want and they have the peace of mind, right? Because there's a lot of questions that goes into, in our website, we're going to have a comprehensive living trust guide that we've created. It's about 32 pages. It's a free download. I'll send the link. We haven't completed it yet. We'll get a landing page where people can get a comprehensive living trust. This is, I always tell people, just because it has all the questions for a comprehensive living trust, that is not a comprehensive living trust. It's a guide. Right? Right. Do not think if you answer all the questions, you have a trust. So that would be that you can get that on there. And if you go in and if you're listening anywhere in the United States and you would like to have a comprehensive living trust, I invite you to go to estate.prep, and you could use the coupon code Boomer Woman. And the reason why you will save $1,000 from your estate plan to be able to take action. Now, that's for the first 10. So anybody that's there that has 10 that wants an estate plan and you live anywhere in the United States, I recommend that. If you're not, find somebody locally. You know, do not do this to your kids. We know you love them. I mean, we could all, and I always tell my mom, you know, I was just a unique, my mom always says, you're special, son. I said, no, mom, I always created you problems. She goes, no, you're just special. You're just special. But we did it. So I recommend that everybody do get one, look into it, take advantage of it, because, you know, we're on this awareness crusade to be able to tell the world that, you know, two things are guaranteed. And I think even those two things are guaranteed, not only in the United States, but I think everywhere in the world. One is that we're all going to pay our fair share of taxes, and two, we're all going to die, no matter what. And I hate using that word, but I think that's something that's really important, that we should have an estate plan in place, have peace of mind, and more importantly, change the legacy of your family by leaving them peace of mind and knowing that you know where you want to be buried and what you really want. Because sometimes it's easier to put it in writing than to tell.
You actually jumped the gun there. I was going to let you do all that near the end.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
No, that's good. No, because as you were talking, it suddenly occurred to me that when I led in with this, you mentioned legacy, and I went, oh, if you say you support a charity and you want them to continue to get paid, can that be done after death in your living?
Absolutely. You put that in the living trust. I'll give you an example. I had one of the teachers. She's a cat lover. She left a portion of her pension to a shelter for cats, right? But through the living, she left it to the living trust, and the beneficiary was that section. And she said 25% to go there, and the other one to grow in assets, and then they get 25% of the assets that grow, so they always have funding. I go, what a great idea. Yeah. What a phenomenal. I said, man, I go, you know, you just changed that organization's life. That one donation. right when you pass. She goes, you know what? They've always done it. And I, she doesn't have any kids. She's been a career woman and she's traveled the world and she's just a sweetheart. She's 78 years old. She's still working, but that is, you know, she said she loved, that's what she wants. And I said, can I do that? And I said, yes, you can. That's how we created her trust. You know, she sold her house. She lives in a small apartment. And I said, you know, why? She says, because you know what? I don't want to rent it. I don't want the maintenance. I don't want the headache. She says, when summer comes, I go on a 15 or a 2 month cruise or a 15 day cruise. I cruise all the time, you know, and that's it. And you should. You're 78. That's what it is. So yes, you can do that. It's that creative. If it's the limitations are only to the imagination of one's mind.
Okay. You've explained a lot. I've bounced you around a little bit. Is there anything that we've missed that you really want mid-age, we're talking to women mostly, to think about?
Here's the thing. One is I think women outlive men. And so one of the things that when I get it, and what I've seen is that you have to get aggressive with your man or your husband if you're there, or your partner, or with yourself to take action. This is something that if you have kids or loved ones or you're a career person, the worst thing that you can do is wait for tomorrow, because tomorrow will never come. And yesterday is too late because that's gone. The best time is today, and to take action today. So I don't think there's anything more about the living trust. I think we hit probably most of the solid points. And I think that, you know what, you're a mother. If you're a single mother, you have to have at least a guardianship agreement. You have to do that.
Yeah.
Because in California, here's the thing. If you don't have a guardianship, they take your kids and they put them into social services. That means jail. Take your kids and they put them in jail. Like I was the godparent, and when my compadre died, I went in. I said, "No, man. I'm the guardian of these kids. I'm going over there. It's 2 o'clock. I'm on my way over there right now to pick them up. Do not take them. Do not leave the house with the kids, right? Because I thought, what a trauma of having your kids go through something like that. That is just trauma. Terrible."
Yeah, and I think everywhere in the world has their horror stories about social services and children. Yeah.
Yeah, and so I think if anything I could leave you with is we can do anything. We have the financial resources for anything of those things that are important. If they are not important, we do not have the resources for it, period. Right? When I was in the hospital, I always told my mom, I said, "Mom, you know, I looked at your paycheck. She was making like 80 bucks a week. I said, how did you put us in Little League?" And she said, "You know, I showed Shackley. I showed vitamins so I can pay for you to play Little League." I'm like, "Wow." I said, 80 bucks a week? I mean, how did you live off that? She goes, "No, here's the best part. I would still give my $20 to the church." Wow, how do you do that? But I say that with you because mothers are very resourceful when it's necessary, and that is. And I would say put this right up on your list of something that needs to happen sooner than later, because if like anything in California, 10 years ago, a living trust was $600. Right now, from an attorney, right now an attorney creates a living trust from $3,000. $10,000. Right now, you could literally get it using the coupon code Boomer Woman. Use that coupon code when you check out. You can get it for $1,495. Unlimited updates.
Good. Okay. So I'm just going to go through this again. It's Estate Doc Prep. Now, doc as in document. EstateDocPrep.com. Now, you're also on social, I believe, are you?
Yes, we all have all the social media links, but if you go to the website, you'll be able to do it.
Well, you have a link in your profile, so I will put your website link and that link, and I will also write out all of the coupon code information. Okay.
Thank you
so that's great. Much. Good. Okay, wow. My head's bulging right now from all the information you've just given us. That's great. And thank you for that generous offer. Okay, so just to review, now, website link is in the show notes, as well as the information on your coupon. All of your links, including social, just in case people just want to keep up on stuff, are on your page at our website. You have a dedicated page, or you will have. Listeners, are you one of the planners or one of the procrastinators? If you're the latter, after listening to Oscar today, I hope you jump off that wagon. If you have thoughts on today's show, please talk to us. You can leave comments where you're listening, or if you're listening at boomwithabang.com, scroll to the bottom of the page and talk to us there. Maybe there was a question I didn't ask Oscar. Ask it in the comments and I'll get you an answer. Share this episode. Estate planning is one of those subjects you can never have too much information on. And that goes for your friends and family. It might also be a way, and Oscar mentioned this, to help explain to your loved ones just what you have in place and why. If you're enjoying this podcast, click follow. That helps us even more than stars. I'm also registered at Substack. Following there is free, and you get an email every time a new episode comes out. Oscar Vasquez, thank you for being my guest today and sharing so much information about how to implement some of the parts of estate planning, and more importantly, probably why to do it.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Have a great rest of week.